If you're like most people from our culture, you don't like to wait, right? Zero wait times. That's like the new thing everybody's working on. Same day delivery. How much have I seen that on Amazon in this season? I'm actually not good at waiting. I'm really not, and it shows up every time I travel to Rwanda, which is a culture that is more relaxed with time. And even though I know going there that I need to reset my expectations, which I work really hard to do, just try to relax, let others be in charge, it's not long before some particular situation will really get on my nerves in terms of time. And it's not that Rwandans are laid back or careless or not organized, quite the opposite. But their solutions to things are group solutions rather than the work of an individual. In other words, they take in the input of the whole group, whereas we just want to rush and get it done, go to the head of the line. By the time you've waited in line for immigration there, assuming you even stood in the proper line, because they're not marked, by the way, and the time you've waited for your luggage, which can be delivered to any carousel in the airport, you know you're in a different kind of place with different expectations. And you know, there's always a good reason for what they do. Once you understand that, you're like, oh, I get that, okay, and your culture. But that's hard for us. It's certainly hard for me. Edward T. Hall was a pioneering anthropologist and a founder of international communication studies. And he wrote about time and culture and the way people communicate time. And in his excellent work, The Silent Language, he told the story of two Afghan brothers who lived far apart in the country at a time when travel and communication was very limited. And they had agreed to come together and meet in the market in Kabul after the fall harvest. Well, one of the brothers showed up there at this market year after year. And he was asked by an American observer who had seen what was going on, what he was doing. And so this brother recounted their plan to meet. But he indicated that they had not said which year. Now, that kind of thing would drive most of us crazy, right? But they knew they'll get together some point, sometime, some year. So we come to the new season of the church year, Advent, which is a word that means coming or arrival, which is all about waiting, I have to tell you, right at the start. And some of us enter reluctantly because we want to get on with it. We want things resolved. We don't understand the importance of waiting, or we think we've done enough of that already. But the beauty and necessity of the waiting of Advent is that it connects us with God's purposes and God's timeline in the world and in our own lives. You see, we need a place where we can wait and wait well. And so we start a new year in the dark, in a hidden place, waiting. And really hardly anything begins that way, except, if you think about it, life itself. If you're new to the church year, then a little primer on this. The church year runs from the first Sunday of Advent today through the Feast of Christ the King, which was last Sunday. In the first part of the year, 6 months, we observe the extraordinary events in the life of Jesus. The other 6 months, what we call ordinary time, we walk with Jesus in his earthly ministry or with the church or with the patriarchs and matriarchs of the Old Testament. So today we start over, Advent 1, a new calendar, a chance to start again. Advent is the church's season before the celebration of Christ's birth. And there are 4 Sundays of Advent. Then there's Christmas, which is actually 12 days long, not one day. Then Epiphany, which is the manifestation of Christ to the Gentiles, as seen in the journey of the Magi. And it's a season that culminates at the Mount of Transfiguration in all of its blazing glory. That is the season of light. That's what we're entering now. And it starts with one candle, if you can just imagine. We have one candle here. And the light grows throughout this season. Now, much of the church has forgotten this important pattern, and I didn't grow up with this pattern. And they've chosen instead, I don't think intentionally, but just to kind of go along with the Madison Avenue and the commercial Christmas season. It runs from Thanksgiving till Christmas morning, right? And then it's dropped like a lead balloon. It's done. We're done with it. But for almost all of its history, the church has had this season of waiting, of preparing, of watching, of hoping, of embracing and rejoicing the promises and the purposes of God. So what are we waiting for? Are we waiting for Christmas? Well, that's not a bad thing. And if that's the best that we do, it will have some merit. But really, for much of the church's life, Advent was a season that was observed as alignment with God's justice and righteousness, to take stock of the darkness and the struggle of the world and hold it up alongside God's redemption, to affirm that God would bring his salvation to bear, that God would make things right in the end. It's why we begin this season not with Bethlehem and the manger and shepherds and all that and Christ's first coming in our minds, but with our thoughts set on the coming of Christ to take up his full reign. Advent has always been about the second coming, the eschatological hope, as much as it has come to prepare us for the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. Fleming Rutledge, in her new book on Advent, says that in the Middle Ages in the church, the themes of Advent were the four last things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. And in fact, the Sermon on Hell was preached right before Christmas Eve. As Jonathan Richards said this morning, they didn't call it the Dark Ages for nothing. Rutledge says this. She says, that was no accident. The idea was, and it is, to show how the light of the birth of Christ appeared against a backdrop of darkness, depravity, and despair. Which is why waiting is such a vital theme to the season, because we still wait and we still watch for God's judgment, his justice, his righteousness to be fully in play. We wait in times that are dark and full of things that we know are just not right. Just not right. So we actually wait on a few levels in Advent. And I want to share a few, with you, and you can add others. We wait with Israel. We wait with the world and with creation. And we wait for the situations in our own lives, for the light and life of Christ to make things new. So the first of these is we're called to remember that Israel waited. Advent sort of lifts that up to us. It takes us back into the promises that the Messiah would come, but boy, there was a lot of waiting. Waiting for the Messiah, long promised, and then when he came, was missed by most because his coming was not according to expectations. We can forget sometimes that there were hundreds of years of silence, times when the prophets didn't speak, when inspiration was rare and people forgot. There were the sayings of the prophets, and these were kept alive by those who remembered such things. And the hope of the Messiah was certainly always at the center of Israel's life. But Israel had waited so long that when the angel encountered Zechariah in the temple to announce the coming birth of John the Baptist, the renewing of the story, the old priest couldn't believe it. He wouldn't believe it. He was still in that time of waiting, of silence. Jeremiah tells the people that God will fulfill his promises to Israel and the house of Judah. And that word, first given in 2 Samuel 7, of a perpetual kingship in the line of David, would not be forgotten, but it would come to pass. In the grand story of salvation, Advent is about God keeping promises, and that our waiting, like Israel's waiting, is about God's timing. Like Israel, we submit to the Lord's plans and purposes in his time. And although we affirm that God has kept his promise and Messiah has already come, we recognize the long season of waiting in the dark and that God has been faithful and true. It should give us a little, I think, empathy for our Jewish brothers and sisters who in their minds still wait. And as we proclaim Christ to them, understand they've waited a long time. They've shown us how to wait, I think. Secondly, we also wait in Advent with the world. in the midst of suffering and pain, of sickness and death, natural disasters, injustices. We wait for the consummation of the age, for the justice and righteousness of God to be fully present. We live in the now moment. We have to recognize what it is like in the world and not sugarcoat it when we come to Advent. We do look for the future moment, but we live in the now moment as well. Theologian Karl Barth asked, what other season or time the church could ever have but that of Advent? Because in a way, it's always Advent for us, because we're always waiting for God's reign to come in the world. Jeremiah touches on this in the reading today, and so do the readings from 1 Thessalonians and Luke. In fact, on the first Sunday in each year of Advent, so 3 years of readings, and we're entering year C, if you want to know that, the New Testament lesson focuses on the future coming of the Lord, and the gospel readings are taken from the apocalyptic discourses of Jesus every first Sunday of Advent. So we open Advent with waiting and longing, looking to the light of Christ, even in the world's dark season. While waiting in a Nazi prison in 1943, a few weeks before Advent, Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote to a friend. He said, a prison cell in which one waits, hopes, does various unessential things, and is completely dependent on the fact that the door of freedom has to be opened from the outside is not a bad picture of Advent. The justice and righteousness of God are not vague spiritual ideas. For Jeremiah, this meant fair and equitable relationships among people. It meant impartial law courts. It meant protection of the weak from the strong, that's the justice, and the personal characteristics that made such conditions possible. That's righteousness. They're very real, they're concrete. In Advent, we wait, we hope, and we long for those very things. We say again that Christ, in his fully realized kingdom, will bring this all about. And that the reign of God isn't beyond time or for some other world, it's coming to our world in God's time. And so we wait. Like creation itself in Romans 8, waiting in hope for liberation from its bondage and decay. There's a way that Eugene Peterson has put that in the message about waiting and the gift of waiting from Romans 8 that I'd like to read, just the way that he puts it. All around us we observe a pregnant creation. The difficult times of pain throughout the world are simply birth pangs. But it's not only around us, it's within us. The Spirit of God is arousing us within. We're also feeling the birth pangs. These sterile and barren bodies of ours are yearning for full deliverance. That is why waiting does not diminish us any more than waiting diminishes a pregnant mother. We are enlarged in the waiting. We, of course, don't see what is enlarging us. But the longer we wait, the larger we become, and the more joyful our expectancy. Meanwhile, the moment we get tired in the waiting, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. Waiting enlarges us. And we are also in this waiting about the things within us. And that's kind of my third observation, that in Advent, we wait for the coming of Christ into our lives, into our situations, into our personal circumstances. Because we know that there are just things that aren't right there. There are things and areas in our lives where we have struggled, or where things or people are broken. Relationships, addictions, just stuff. Things that don't seem to mend year after year. Desires we have, things we long for, hopes and dreams that just seem to elude us. In Advent, we bring these things to God. We acknowledge our weakness. We lift up our need in the midst of the longing of all of God's people. And that's why Advent is dark as well as light, at least as we start. And why we may find it hard. Because it requires honesty and vulnerability. It's the willingness to wait when we'd rather have resolution. We enter Advent morning to some degree. There is that wonderful prayer in the Compline service, which is the last service of the day in the prayer book tradition, that is a prayer of blessing for those who wait and watch and weep in the night. And we enter Advent waiting and watching, and some of us weeping, as we wait on God's deliverance. But in such waiting, there is hope. There is hope, because we recall the promises of God and God's faithfulness to his promises. We adopt a prayerful watchfulness, in the words of Fred Craddock, that can lead us to freedom from indulgence and anxiety about things. Waiting in this season can help to lift the heaviness and worry of our longings as God brings his advent to us. And we don't stay in this place. I mean, by week three, we're in rejoicing. It's a movement. And you know, we may continue to long for some things our entire life. There may be things that we don't see resolved until the next world, the coming of God's kingdom. But we will then. We will then. We will when the Lord comes to us, God with us. And how we wait is important. So I think Scott mentioned last week that Dietrich Bonhoeffer was your favorite theologian. And we have some wonderful theologians that sit in this room from time to time. And I read them and I try to understand them. And sometimes I do. But one of my favorite theologians is Fred Rogers. So he's probably more my speed. And he did a lot of his theology in songs and in music. And he had a wonderful little song he wrote for kids, but I think for us too, called While We're Waiting. I would sing it to you, but I've forgotten most of it while I was waiting. But it's a little ditty. It's kind of fun. It's just let's think of something to do while we're waiting. Something to do that's true just for you. Do you know the song? Anybody? Okay. And you know, for us as Christians, as disciples, we want to wait in the things that are true to us, in the way that we can wait well. And so we wait in prayer. This is what we hear from Jesus' words in Luke, in watching and careful observance of our lives. We wait while we rehearse God's faithfulness in bringing the pain of the world to the light of Christ, bringing them together. Our own pain, the pain of our society, the pain of creation itself. And we give thanks that the judgment of God is coming. That's a good thing. I think we think of it as the condemnation of God. No, it's the judgment of God, which means all those things that are wrong, all those things that have brought us tears, all those things that weigh us down, the things that emerge from the evil in the world will be judged and cast away when Christ comes to reclaim the world. And the world will be again as it was made to be. That's the good news. So we light the candle in the dark, and we await his coming. Amen.